This is a network of labor activists who over multiple years have been pushing for labor organizers, movements, unions in Canada to both build relationships with worker organizations in occupied Palestine and more broadly support the Palestinian struggle for freedom and against Israeli military occupation. In recent months, Labor for Palestine has been very active in organizing protests and also pushing within the labor movement in Canada for there to be a strong support for Palestinian human rights and for the labor movement to join with many across the world, particularly throughout the global south, who are calling for justice in Palestine within labor movements, human rights organizations, and across the world in many spheres of life. This conversation, I think, is interesting because it tracks both recent organizing, but thinking about how to sustain over time solidarity organizing outside of crisis points. So here's my conversation with Hassan Hosseini of Labor for Palestine. Labor movements have historically found ways to think about solidarity across borders and also across communities. You know, labor unions often, you know, are linking different experiences of workplace injustice to think about how to work together to demand justice and to embody also the organizing it takes to change societies. And international solidarity has always been an important part, especially at the grassroots of labor movements. And, you know, at this moment, we see a lot of labor movements and unions around the world protesting the Israeli state's military campaign and genocidal acts against the Palestinian people in Gaza. And I wanted to talk to you about your organizing, but also really to think about and understand how solidarity with Palestine is part of, you know, a broader movement for justice, you know, locally and globally. So maybe you could first introduce yourself and share some thoughts about this. Thank you so much.
Sure. Yes. My name is Hassan Hosseini. I'm my work is at the Public Service Alliance of Canada, PSCC. I am a national negotiator, which makes me a member. I'm organized as well, a member of a union, which is UNIFOR, Local 2025. And I've been, of course, a labor and international solidarity activist and community organizer for a very long time in Ottawa and in Toronto. And so I remember my first experiences, of course, in the community and working within left organizations and activists in Ottawa and again in Toronto is participating in actions and demonstrations called for by labor organizations and activists against the apartheid in South Africa in the late 80s. And so this, I came to the movement at a time when unions were heavily involved and were playing a very significant role in the anti-apartheid movement in Canada. And I think what we are witnessing right now is moving in that direction again, in that sense. And of course, as you said, labor, without having that angle of international solidarity, true worker-to-worker international solidarity, all our resolutions that speak about standing up for working people across borders and fighting for justice and making land acknowledgements and talking about decolonization and having Black History Month celebrations, all of it becomes meaningless unless we actually back it up with something concrete when it really counts, right? It becomes performative. And unfortunately, there is a lot of performative actions that people and movements, and the labor movement is no exception, that they engage in. But what we've witnessed over the years, and I think since October 7th up to now, with the genocide against the people in Gaza, is that more and more labor activists and more unions are moving into action, and not only taking better positions, but starting to at least think about ways where those positions can become concretized to put pressure. So it's and again, from my perspective, I see the positive development within the labor movement. Because if you look at it only within the context of a couple of years or so, you may think that it's the development is very slow, not well defined, and you may take a negative view. However, if you look at it from the context of a couple of decades, you will see that we've come a long way. Okay, we still have a long way to go, but we've come a long way in a positive direction in terms of support for the Palestinian people's liberation struggle.
I think it could be meaningful for people to understand a bit about the political space of labor organizing. I mean, this initiative, Labor for Palestine, in the Canadian context, is it's not simple to hold that space and to sort of maintain that autonomous space, but that is also connected to labor organizing. And you mentioned sort of the performative aspect that we're seeing a lot within cultural institutions, within labor institutions, within academic institutions. And, you know, we see this a lot in the arts too, where there's a lot of gestures that have changed in recent years. And the gesture change is not necessarily bad. At least there's an acknowledgement. But when it really counts, and it really counts right now because of the genocidal actions taking place in Gaza, I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about, you know, because you've been plugging away at this for a long time, holding this space, Labor for Palestine. There's a lot that happens when things are not in the news. if you could talk about that sort of long haul, consistent effort, that like holding space when things are not exciting and you know, within the labor movement, and why that's important to sort of shifting narratives and also taking that narrative shift into action when it counts.
That's a very good question, because Labor for Palestine started back in 2006 on the heels of the call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions by the 170 unions and civil society organizations in Palestine. But it started originally as a labor committee, essentially, of the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid in Toronto. Over the years, it went dormant, and we resurrected it in 2017. And since then, it has been a bit of a tough slug to try to bring activists on board, to bring resolutions. I think we've certainly had some victories in terms of resolutions that we've been able to pass at conventions, at all levels, from the CLC right down to locals, right? Including a very important resolution in 2021, in June 21 at the CLC, that essentially adopted a form of BDS and specifically zeroed in on the arms embargo and products from the Israeli settlement in the occupied territories. So we did important work during that period of time. Of course, we've said lately that had the labor movement in Canada been better on the question of Palestine, Labor for Palestine wouldn't have had to exist, right? But we exist because there is a space that is vacated within the labor movement that we need Labor for Palestine to do that work. So, of course, fast forward from 2017 up to 23 October, and us keeping it alive and doing this work and having some successes, but at the same time having some failures, which we're learning from, and trying to get people to be active and to play a role within Labor for Palestine, which hasn't been easy. And, of course, in October, we've had a huge interest in the organization from workers, organized and non-organized, from right across the country, and I would say from really coast to coast to coast. And I was talking to workers from the north who are actually engaging in actions in support of Palestine. And so this posed a challenge for us, or how to integrate everybody into the work, but also it was a great opportunity for us to do what we've been wanting to do. And so engaging more with these activists allowed us to reach into places that we didn't have presence in before, both geographically but also sectors within the labor movement. We've established 9 chapters across the country, from so far from Victoria to St. John's, Newfoundland. And we have established also a number of Labor for Palestine caucuses within unions. And we're engaging with hundreds, if not thousands, of activists on almost daily basis in a number of ways, both in terms of education, awareness raising, engaging them in every city where we have presence, mobilizing them to participate in demonstrations, taking action directed at, of course, the powers that be, at the elected officials, but also directed at an organization such as the Canadian Labour Congress that has unfortunately been pretty much, well, I can't say silent because they took a position, but the position was worse than being silent. It is actually shameful that an organization such as the Canadian Labour Congress adopted the position of the ITUC, the International Trade Union Confederation, which in its own compared victim and victimizer, compared and made some kind of symmetry between colonized and the colonizers. The International Court of Justice, led the case by South Africa, there was complete silence from the Canadian Labour Congress. All this to say that we as labour activists and Labour for Palestine are engaging not only with elected officials at all levels of the government, not only are we engaging with activists in communities and in the labour movement, but we're also trying to put pressure on labour unions to do 2 things. One is take a better position, whether it would be resolutions or statements. But also we're saying, considering the genocide, that is no longer sufficient. You need to act on these good positions and good resolutions and take concrete steps to put pressure on the Canadian government, on the Israeli government, on any private corporation or institution that is complicit and is or benefiting from the occupation, settler colonialism, and the genocide.
A lot to get into here. One thing that comes to mind is thinking about economic systems. And in the Canadian context, we see a lot of workplace injustice, often in sort of quote-unquote frontier industries, where people are sent out largely into indigenous areas to collect resources, often within economic equations where the workers are not well treated. On top of it, they're doing this work often without any agreement from the indigenous people who are already in these lands. We're talking about like the forestry industry or mining, many others. And I'm just thinking about the sort of equation of settlement and sort of unpacking how, you know, injustice is sort of shaped by our world understandings, right? And I think often it can be sort of disconnected, these realities. And you know, I think it's always important also to try to not exceptionalize Palestine, but connect it to the world. And I know that that's been important to you. So if you could share any thoughts about that.
Yeah, no, it definitely, what is happening in Palestine, yes, of course, it is not disconnected. And I think if we're speaking today, and yesterday, the cabinet minister for the NDP government in British Columbia, Selena Robinson, made a statement, I think, on, I'm not sure if it's on a show or when she had a webinar with B'nai B'rith, made the statement that that Palestine essentially was a crappy place that was, yes, it was inhabited by several hundred thousand people, indigenous Palestinians, but they had no economy and really put out the quintessential logic or illogic of colonialism and settler colonialism. The point I'm making is that the way that somebody like Robinson spoke connects Palestine to any and every other settler colonial state and colonization, including in Canada, right? And that is why there is nothing unique in many respects with respect to what's happening in Palestine. And in fact, I think it is because of that commonality when you are confronting a settler colonial state that is supported by all the imperialist white supremacist powers in the world, it is inevitable that you find common allies with the indigenous people, for instance, on Turtle Island, who are continuously struggling against the genocide they've been subjected to for hundreds of years right now, and it is continuing. The latest manifestations of it that we've seen is, of course, the uncovering of the mass graves of indigenous children right across the country. It's a shame on Canada, of course, but all this to say that Palestine and the struggle of the Palestinian people for liberation and decolonization is very much part of the global struggle against imperialism and against settler colonialism the world over. And that's why you are seeing people moving all over the world in the hundreds of thousands, in the millions, in support of the Palestinian people. And it is that common struggle and the awareness and the consciousness that people are gaining every single day on the common struggle between them and the struggle of the Palestinian people that scares the establishment, that scares the powers that be. And I think what is even more significant is the fact that increasing number of progressive anti-Zionist Jews are joining the struggle for Palestinian freedom. This is certainly scary for Zionists and for those who are apologize and enable and are complicit in the genocide.
It's not obvious to take the time to organize within labor spheres often that are not sympathetic to some of the ideas that you're raising. You talked about the challenges of the Canadian Labor Congress. That's a choice. And often in activism, you know, there's a lot of autonomous and very important organizing that is happening on the streets, and that often pushes conversation. But I'm wondering if you could reflect a bit about that importance and challenges also of engaging with institutions, labor unions. You know, that's not simple. And I'm wondering if you could get into that a bit more about that choice you've made to try to bring this issue forth in that context, because very easily you could organize autonomously as a community member and do activism for Palestine.
Indeed. And I think a lot of us are engaging on multi-levels, right? They are engaging with the community as community members. But I think there is a recognition definitely by Labor for Palestine. And that's why our membership, we are engaging mostly and primarily with labor activists who are unionized members, because we recognize that unions, as they did in the past with South African apartheid, as organized labor, there is a unique role that they can play, the unique power that they have, which unorganized workers perhaps may not have access to, the resources, the organization, the democratic nature of unions, the power that they have if they act collectively. And so that is why we made the choice that Labor for Palestine would be focused on the organized labor movement in Canada. Again, history teaches us something, and in this case, it's teaching us that labor can act and can play an important role in bringing down the apartheid system in Israel, as it did in the case of South Africa. But you're absolutely right. It is not easy to engage because labor unions from the period of the Second World War, when we made a compromise with the Canadian state and established a labor relations regime, that is, of course, the goal of the state was always to depoliticize it, right? So you no longer see political strikes and solidarity strikes and the labor relations regime as Harry Glasbeck, a professor at Osgoode Hall Law School, wrote in his book, is that there's a legal straitjacket that the labor movement is now facing with respect to the labor relations regime. All this to say that it's not easy, but it must be done because of the recognition we have. And of course, labor unions, because they've become institutions of the, to a great extent, they're institutions within the capitalist state, but also they can be counter-hegemonic within the capitalist state itself. There's this seeming contradiction, but there is certainly a duality. So we want to ditch and we want to challenge the institutionalization of the labor movement as part of the capitalist state, and we want to build up the counter-hegemonic structures of the labor movement to take on the system, both at a class level, okay, to fight for working people and to believe that working people can fight the system and make change, but also on a broad level of worker-to-worker solidarity across the globe. Okay, because capitalism and imperialism, they're not disconnected systems. They're one and the same. And as we said earlier, the struggle of the Palestinian people for liberation is part and parcel of the indigenous people's struggles across the world to decolonize. Okay, but it's been a tough slug. And we've, you know, I mean, there's a little, one micro scale. When we think of organizations, for instance, such as the Canadian Labour Congress, we see that they have really taken a very strong position in support of the Ukrainian people's right to defend themselves and to resist, even with arms, the Russian occupation that started 2 years ago of Ukraine. Yet they remain silent, and not only that, they condemn the Palestinian people by equating them to their colonizers. You're de facto condemning their right to defend themselves and to engage in an internationally recognized right to resist occupation. Because an organization such as the Canadian Labour Congress is more embedded as an institution of the capitalist state than they're not. And not easy to take them on, but we need to do it. And we need to continue to stay the course. And I can tell you that we are finding every single day more and more allies, okay, within the labor movement that we've seen before and that we knew that they were there. And so I am very hopeful that our efforts are only going to grow and going to lead to more positive results in terms of working people, organized and non-organized, taking action and continuing to stand up for the Palestinian people's right to liberation.
Thank you, Hassan.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with Hassan Hosseini from Labor for Palestine in Canada, an organizer who has been working very hard to build support for Palestinian human rights within the labor movement in Canada. Thanks for tuning in. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm your host, Stefan Christoph, and we air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CJLO 1690 a.m., also in Montreal, Geoghegan, on Wednesdays at 8:30 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg at 10:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, BC on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto at 5:30 a.m. on Fridays, and on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Look us up and tell a friend. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week. Take care.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.